Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Brand new New York Governor David Paterson made quite an impression at his swearing-in yesterday in Albany. Sudden heir to the disgraced Eliot Spitzer, only the third black governor to take office in the country since Civil War Reconstruction, and of equal or greater interest to some Americans, that rarest of political leaders, a chief executive who is legally blind, using all his senses to lead a big, rambunctious state. Other blind leaders have called him an inspiration. Up next on Point, we'll talk with a roundtable of blind Americans about living and working and leading blind. From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Newly minted Governor David Paterson is New York State's first legally blind chief executive. As he took the oath of office yesterday, leaders in the world of the visually impaired called it an inspiration, an important message to the sighted world. Governor Paterson is a big deal, particularly when you look at the statistics. 70% of America's working-age blind are unemployed. David Paterson has people talking about tapping the talents of a very particular community, the community of the visually impaired and blind. Today, we continue that conversation with blind achievers who have succeeded in our very visual world. This hour, On Point, working, living, and leading blind. You can join the conversation. What does the David Paterson story tell you about living and working legally blind? What's your question, your insight on his talents and challenges? I'll be joined in a moment by our panel, but first, joining me from Albany, New York, is Karen DeWitt. She's the Capital Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio. Karen, thanks very much for joining us.
Nice to be here, Tom.
Paint the tableau yesterday for us. David Paterson being sworn in. What after an incredible fall from grace by Eliot Spitzer, what did New Yorkers see in that tableau of the swearing in of this man?
Yeah, it was really history-making. And, you know, it was really a joyous day at State Capitol and a huge relief after all that went on with Governor Spitzer. I did not expect people to be so happy after what happened the week before. Many people, when Paterson was speaking, had tears in their eyes, me included, and I usually am not that kind of reporter, but it was just the impact of how groundbreaking it is, being the first African-American and first visually impaired governor. It just really hit people.
Now, remind us of I'm sorry, Karen, but remind us of the biography of this man and the political, circle that he comes from.
Yeah. For 20 years, since 1985, comes out of a powerful political family in Harlem. He was a Senate Democratic leader since 2002 until he was picked by Eliot Spitzer to be his running mate as lieutenant governor, and of course won in 2006. But I have to tell you, around here in the Capitol, most people don't really think about him being blind or visually impaired. His aides follow him around a little more closely, and they'll kind of whisper the names of people who are approaching, and we know that he has documents read to him out loud. But you know what? You just, after a while, you don't think about it. You really don't. And I think that's part of, you know, he doesn't call attention to it, and it's just him, you know? And I mean, I think that's, you know, a really good thing, the way that it's handled here.
Though when it comes up, he doesn't duck it. He's handled it with the kind of amiable humor that he's applied to a lot of what comes at him. At a press conference last week, we've got some tape here, Karen, reporters asked David Paterson about being New York's first black governor and the country's first blind governor.
71% of the blind are unemployed. 90% of deaf people in this country are unemployed. Maybe one of them could figure out a cure for cancer. So to whatever extent my presence impresses upon employers or impresses upon younger people who are like me in either way, then I would feel very privileged, very proud, and very flattered to be in this position.
Now, of course, there was another governor in Arkansas for a matter of days who was visually impaired or blind, but really, for, you know, for the full deal, this is it. How does it show up? When he stands in front of a crowd, when he works at a press conference, when he meets with political peers, he has some sight. Describe that for us, and how does his blindness present itself?
Well, you know, his eyes are unfocused and he doesn't make eye contact with you. But as I said, after the first couple of times that you encounter that, it's not really a big deal. I mean, you know, he speaks very well, as probably a lot of people heard his speech yesterday. And actually, I think in a way it was better. It was part memorized, part improvisation. Other politicians, they get into that assembly chamber and they have the teleprompter. It's very stiff and formal. They don't really react to the crowd. And he seemed much more in touch with what was going on in the room because, you know, he has to be a little more sensitive, I think.
Let's listen to...
I just have to say I was really shocked by that statistic that 70% of people with visual impairments are unemployed. I really didn't know that. And I actually stopped the newsstands here at the Capitol. They're run by blind people, and I talked to them yesterday.
Yeah.
And I really learned a lot that I had, you know, I buy my paper there every day and hadn't really thought about it, that they were just very happy to have those jobs and actually were much better educated than you would need to be to run a newsstand, but we're grateful that those were the only jobs that they could get.
We're going to look at that, among other issues, today, but you mentioned his inaugural speech yesterday, and I want to get just a little flavor of that. David Paterson, again, in Albany, giving the public a taste of his self-deprecating style.
We don't know the path yet, but that's because we haven't blazed the trail. And I think you all know that I know a little bit about finding one's way through the dark.
And he spoke about, acknowledged the prejudices that he's faced and overcome.
I have confronted the prejudice of race and challenged the issues of my own disability. I have served in government for over 2 decades. I stand willing and able to lead this state to a brighter future and a better tomorrow.
A very warm reception, as you say, Karen DeWitt, for this.
And, you know, I guess I would have to point out he didn't get the warm reception because he's visually impaired. He got it because he's made so many friends in the political system over the years and because he's known to be very intelligent and a very good politician. So I think that, you know, there's a lot more of that is why people respect him, but also because he overcame something.
If we needed any reminders of the full humanity of this and all our leaders, it also came out this week after the Elliot Spitzer scandal that David Paterson had an affair of his own, and his wife acknowledged an affair during a rough patch in their marriage several years ago. Given the Spitzer circumstances of his departure, I guess we can't ignore it. What was learned there?
You can't make this stuff up, you know? I mean,
really?
What a week. Here I thought maybe for the first time in over a week I'd have a normal day and maybe do a story about the state budget, which
right.
I do in less than 2 weeks. But David Paterson disclosed to one of the tabloids in the New York Daily News that both he and his wife had extramarital affairs during a rocky time in their marriage. I think he was smart to do that because there's been lots of rumors around that Paterson has, you know, a so-called girlfriend problem. And this way he's trying to control the story by picking the New York Daily News, not the New York Post, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who might
yep.
be more salacious about the whole story, but not the New York Times, which might not want to run it. So he picked the right paper, and he's actually going to, you know, make some comments about it and try to, you know, get it out front right away and put it aside. But I have to say there's a big difference between Elliot Spitzer, who was pretty much a moral scold and, you know, prosecuted a prostitution ring and then was found to be patronizing a high-priced call girl doing something illegal. I think there's a very big difference between the two acts.
And here David Paterson and his wife, Michelle, sort of presenting this in quite a different way as well. Fully human there, but as you say, with an enormous agenda awaiting him in Albany, New York. Karen DeWitt with New York State Public Radio. Great to have you. Thank you very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
I am delighted to have with us today a roundtable of guests with a particular take on some of David Paterson's potential insights and challenges. They are each themselves accomplished, experienced, and legally blind. With us from Washington is Jim Gibbons. He is president of National Industries for the Blind, an organization that creates employment opportunities for the blind. Jim, thanks very much for being with us today.
Tom, it's great to be here on your show.
Stephen Cusisto joins the conversation from Iowa City, Iowa. He teaches writing at the University of Iowa. His most recent book is Eavesdropping, a Memoir of Blindness and Listening. You may have seen his op-ed essay last week in the New York Times. Stephen Cusisto, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
And with me in our studio today is Paul Paravano. Paul is co-director of the Office of Government and Community Relations at MIT. Paul, great to have you. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with my two friends from Iowa and Washington.
It's great to have you all. Paul, you're right here with me in the studio. You listened in a little bit with us there to David Patterson. I mean, as a blind person, hearing that we now have a legally blind governor of New York and those statistics about unemployment in that community, is it a marker to you? Does it say something important? Is there something we should pay attention to here?
I think absolutely it says something very loud and clear, which is that we have benefited from the years of change that we've witnessed over the last two decades of mainstreaming opportunities in our schools, increased technology that blind people have access to. And I think 40, 50 years ago, we were all very comfortable about institutionalizing blind people at very early stages of their lives. And now we have much greater acceptance and willingness of people to overlook this very important disability and give people an opportunity to show that they can contribute through their jobs and through their education.
Jim Gibbons, is it going to help you in your work? You're out there trying to get more employment opportunities developed for blind Americans. Is David Patterson sitting at the top of the New York State government going to be a model, an inspiration, a help for you?
Well, I think absolutely. I think that when you have a person who is in such a prominent role who is legally blind, you get an excellent example of role modeling and a demonstration of the capabilities of people who are blind, and the fact that because you're blind, it doesn't discount you in terms of opportunities. I think there's still a lot of challenges out there in terms of employers' misperceptions. But I think that this is an opportunity for the field of blindness and the community at large to step up to a new level and maybe move the needle on that shameful 70% unemployment figure that's out there.
It's just great to have all of you. Stephen Cusisto, you've written powerfully on this, and we want to hear that when we come back. There's a lot we want to learn today. We are talking with a roundtable of blind Americans about working and living and leading blind as legally blind David Patterson takes over as governor of New York State. Listeners, you can join us. Are you captivated by the story of David Patterson taking over the leadership of New York legally blind? Does his blindness sound like a handicap here, or perhaps like an advantage, a fact that might make him more keen, more discerning? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about living blind and leading blind as David Patterson takes over as governor of New York State. We've got a wonderful roundtable of guests with us today. With me in the studio, Paul Paravano, co-director of the Office of Government and Community Relations at MIT. From Washington, D.C., we're joined by Jim Gibbons, president of the National Industries for the Blind for the last 10 years. And from Iowa City, Iowa, and the University of Iowa, Stephen Cusisto teaches writing at the university. He's author of Eavesdropping, a Memoir of Blindness and Listening. You can also check out his blog, Planet of the Blind, at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us blind listeners. What does it mean to you that a legally blind man has now stepped into such a position in the state of New York? Are you inspired? Is this overdue? Have you found your way up or been stymied? And for everyone, what's your question for three men with us today who have dealt themselves with blindness and the workplace? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Stephen Cusisto in Iowa City, I want to come to you first for just a second on just the sort of practicalities of this. Like David Patterson, I mean, David Patterson is legally blind, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have any sight whatsoever. I'm sure yours is different from his, but you're kind of in that same category. I mean, when we say blind or legally blind, there are still gradations and differences here. I wish you'd explain those, Stephen.
Yeah, many people assume that the blind see nothing at all. If you see a person with a guide dog, in fact, that snoring you'll hear behind me is my guide dog, Nira.
Great.
they assume that you see nothing at all, but the majority of blind people actually have something like residual vision or slivers of vision or small fields of vision or something like colors and fog, as I have. And so we make use of our eyes and can discern certain things with our eyes, just not as usefully or as much as the sighted do.
David Patterson, with complete blindness in one eye, a little vision in the other. I mean, he says in his own home and familiar surroundings, he gets around quite easily. He even gets out on the basketball court famously once in a while, once up against Mario Cuomo.
Patterson stole the ball.
Yeah, right. And off he goes. Stephen, what were your feelings, your thoughts on seeing the elevation of David Patterson to this post, governor of New York?
Well, one of the things that I talk about in classes here at the University of Iowa when we teach disability studies is that disability is a social construction more than it is a physical impairment. And by that I mean that people with disabilities can achieve and function in just the same way as normally functioning people, provided that they're given the right accommodations. And if the accommodations are there, the sky's the limit. And so his ascendancy helps the public, I think, understand that anyone with any particular kind of physical deviation can do anything.
Jim Gibbons, paint a picture for us of the blind or legally blind or visually impaired relationship with the workplace these days. That unemployment number is very high. Pick it apart for us. Are those all people who wish they had jobs? Are they people who don't want to have the jobs they're offered? And what about success stories beyond David Patterson within the working world?
Well, I think that when you look at that 7 out of 10 blind Americans not working today, there's a variety of circumstances. There are absolutely thousands of people that are wanting to go to work that have skills and talents and that face whether it's discrimination or just a lack of belief on the part of employers. There are people that have given up and there are people that are out hustling and working it every day to go make sure that they can be successful in the workplace. I think the success stories are there. They're out there throughout our network. We have people who are blind successfully performing at all levels of organizations, whether that's at the CEO level of a business-oriented, not-for-profit business, or at the employee level running computer-aided manufacturing machines that grind or lathe products for Boeing aircraft. So I think the success stories are there. They're not deep enough. They're not rich enough. There are not enough of them. And I think that the David Patterson story is one that I think it was John Quincy Adams said, if your actions inspire others to do more, to dream more, to learn more, to become more, then you're a leader. I think his leadership will inspire that and will offer new opportunities, or I hope will offer new opportunities not only for people who are blind to kind of have those opportunities, but for employers around the country to take a look at themselves. To sit across that interview table and not kind of think about how they would do the job if they were blind, but to believe in what the person brings to the party, not what they don't bring to the party, like vision.
Jim, how did you lose your vision? And does it matter in workplace terms whether a person is, you know, visually impaired or fully blind?
Well, I happen to be totally blind. I started losing my sight in third grade. I have an older sister who is blind as well. I'm the youngest of 8 children. In my particular case, it was a macular degeneration, so my optic nerve deteriorated over time. By the time I was a sophomore, junior in college, I was totally blind and had to really step up to developing blindness skills in terms of independent travel, cane travel, mobility, the use of technology, the use of independent living skills so that I could function and operate independently. I could see just one way that I've described it is I played baseball until sixth grade, basketball until eighth grade, football until ninth grade, and then I wrestled and threw the shot put and discus through high school. So as the ball got smaller or moved faster or Inside Lights, I got out of the sports.
Mm. Hey, Paul Parvano, what about the, Jim talks about blindness skills. When you look at somebody who has worked their way up to quite an important, powerful position, as in David Patterson's case, walk us into some of those blindness skills that he may be exercising that help him function at that very high level at the top of a great big state government.
I think they're very important, and it depends, as you've heard from both Steve and Jim, on the level of blindness and what your own particular needs are. But the issues about independence are all wrapped up in your ability to have confidence in yourself, mm-hmm. To get access to education and to technology that will help you overcome some of the challenges of the workplace. For example, I think it would be very hard to imagine how I would overcome some of the challenges I have at work prior to email, the existence of email.
How do you use email? Is there Braille email?
Well, there is, but I use a laptop computer similar to the one that anyone else would use, mm-hmm. with a screen reader, which is a piece of software that exists on the computer that reads everything on the screen. It verbalizes everything on the screen.
So it speaks your email to you, in effect.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. that if my boss or my colleagues at MIT or my counterparts at other institutions want to communicate with me, they can do it directly, and I can read it instantaneously, and I can respond. Prior to the existence of this kind of technology, I would have to rely on someone to read me the piece of paper or the typed page, although I learned to type when I was in kindergarten.
Mm.
And I used to use a typewriter in school. I remember in first grade I had a typewriter, and whenever we'd have a spelling test,
yeah.
Or a quiz in class.
Clack, 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 you were there.
Exactly, and I did pretty well in those days.
I'm sure.
It wasn't consistent, but I did well in first and second grade. And I remember that when we had a quiz and the answer was yes, I would type Y-E-S, and strangely, the entire class would write yes on their quizzes.
It's three letters, not two. We know
exactly.
What's going on. Stephen, let me just turn to Stephen for a second. What about the temperament skill set, the non-technical skill set that may come into play for David Patterson? Again, I know you don't know him personally. We're all kind of looking in from the outside. But from what you know and can imagine, Stephen.
Well, I've had the opportunity to meet hundreds and hundreds of blind people around the U.S. Over the last decade. And I think that in general, it's safe to say that functioning professional blind people have great patience. And that certainly makes sense, right? If you're standing on a street corner in New York City and you're listening to traffic flow, and as Jim mentioned, you have orientation and mobility skills, you're using your white cane or your guide dog. Mm. Your job is to listen carefully to the traffic flow and make decisions about when to cross the street. The guide dog, in turn, then evaluates that decision and decides whether it's a good one or not. But it's always the blind person's prerogative to decide when to cross that street. And there's training that goes with that called O&M training. And, you know, obviously that requires a degree of attention, discernment, and genuine patience, because, you know, you just simply can't rush willy-nilly headlong into Columbus Circle in New York or into the streets in Boston. I come to Boston a lot.
Right.
I'm a Red Sox fan.
Great.
And I know that I have to pay very careful attention.
Now,
that's patience.
Does that apply to reading people as well, or is that as the sighted world's kind of mythology about the blind, that they develop sort of, you know, superhuman powers of discernment beyond ordinary men and women?
It requires asking questions. So that if I'm in a room, in a meeting with people, you know, whether it's in the university or it's consulting someplace, people are talking, visual people will pass a lot of information through body language and glances. And this will be sort of sublinguistic information. And mm-hmm. I have to ask questions, you know, and I mm-hmm. do. I say, well, was that ironic, or did you mean that, you know, tell me more about that. What did you mean
right.
by
Is
that?
Is your Can eyebrow you cocked? Up? Let me know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that actually, in turn, allows people to expand on what they're thinking, and the conversation becomes richer and more interesting for everybody. So my blindness then enters into a kind of, it's like translation at the UN.
Right. Paul, you were, if I've got it right, you were student body president when you were in college at university.
In high school.
High school.
Yeah. Well, I've always been very interested in politics, and throughout high school I did care a lot about getting along with my other classmates. So I think that you learn through developing relationships, mm-hmm. and that's a topic we haven't gotten into, but I think that how you meet other people and how you connect with them is very important. In high school, I attended several different high schools because my parents were moving around at the time. And every year when you start off with a new class, you had to rebuild this normal connection, because at the beginning it's abnormal because people, your classmates don't quite know what to expect. They haven't experienced.
They're blind. They're not used to it. They don't know the way
exactly.
to begin.
Mm-hmm. And I like to tell people that until they can see you as one of them, or they can call you stupid for having done something stupid, you haven't really arrived. And when you once you get there, it's a big relief because then you can really be one of them. Because as long as you're disconnected and treated differently or treated specially, you're really not going to achieve the blossom that every relationship ought to have.
But you didn't just integrate. You were elected to a position of leadership in that class. Did you feel what you called your blind skill set coming into play in that, or was that just Paul Parvano's personality to end up in that spot?
You know, I think it's more those issues go more into who you are, mm-hmm. maybe your cultural background, your familial background, because my personality is not that different from that of, you know, my brothers, or, you know, it takes a little piece of my mom and my dad. And in high school, I was on the wrestling team, so I got to know people from very different parts of the school. You know, normally we group ourselves into very narrow groups, and if you get to know athletes and you get to know the people who do drama or people into science, you know, you really get access to meeting a lot of different people, and they know you, and they're more comfortable about, you know, choosing you as their student body president.
You in a school, David Patterson, in a whole state with that kind of high-powered, you know, high-stakes state government. Yeah. One can just imagine. We have a lot of callers who want to join us, a lot of blind callers. I want to go to Harriet, calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Harriet, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Yes. Very glad to be listening to the program. And just a little bit about my background. I have two master's degrees in Indian musicology from a Fulbright, and also in ethnomusicology from Wesleyan, and I'm finishing a PhD in ethnomusicology.
Well, bravo you.
Now, I've really played in a lot of different realms. I was born in Ohio. I grew up in Georgia. I lost my sight from ages 6 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
My mom taught me to type, and I was homeschooled for 5 years because we didn't have so much special ed working out at that time.
Right.
And I wanted to point out that there's sort of three different points for the growth and maturation of a person with a visual impairment in the society.
Mm-hmm.
And one is obviously how your parents frame it.
Right.
How the schools and society frames it. And one of the things that hasn't quite been mentioned yet is if that individual has his or her confidence intact, it is a huge, huge asset. So the funny part was my parents were so terrified as I was losing my sight between 6 and 12.
Yeah,
they never used the B word, okay, you know?
So
the actual truth of the matter was that as I was losing my sight, I was adapting. I became very adept. I was the first blind student at a small Waldorf high school, Haimoing in Wilton, New Hampshire.
Yes.
I was the first blind student at Antioch College, okay, the first in 150
years. Hey, way to go.
Years. But the point is, I never considered myself disabled. I just had an inconvenience. And it also helps to be extroverted and willing to talk to people.
Yes.
To people. You can ask anything. I mean, I've lived in India 7 years. I've lived in Germany. I've worked with disabled kids in Europe.
That's
I've worked
great.
At the Mass Office on Disability.
What does it mean to you that David Patterson's now governor of New York? Does it mean something?
Again, sure it does. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as we have anybody with any major so-called disability in a place of leadership, it begins to break down the societal conversation that individuals with disabilities, or in this case visually impaired, mm-hmm. can't be competent.
It opens that right up, yep.
I've raised two children, right? I have a 22-year-old son studying yeah. art in Budapest. I have a 17-year-old adopted daughter from India that we went through an 18-month adoption process while I had a grant in India.
Okay. How has the working world been to you, Harriet?
Now that's an interesting thing. So mostly, I'll tell you, when I came back in the 90s from India, we had that big thing. I sent out over a one-year period 180 applications for social service and teaching jobs and this and that and the other. I got 20 interviews. Mm. I got 4 second interviews, and I got 1 offer. And that was going from $35,000 a year to $21,500 working for Mass Halfway Houses Incorporated.
Right.
And 6 months wait for health insurance.
Harriet, your story is great. We'll come back and celebrate it and talk about it. We got to take a short break here. Thank you so much for calling. Jim Gibbons, Stephen Cusisto, Paul Parravano, please stand by. We're talking about living blind and leading blind as David Paterson takes over as governor of New York State. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with a roundtable of blind Americans about working and living and leading blind as legally blind David Paterson takes over as governor of New York State. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is it time to get past the image of blind success as a musician in dark sunglasses? We've got a lot more going on here, including the governor of the state of New York. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Very glad to be joined today by Jim Gibbons. He's president of the National Industries for the Blind, joins us from Washington, D.C. They work to create more job and employment opportunities for the visually impaired and the blind. From Iowa City, Iowa, Stephen Cusisto is with us, teaches at University of Iowa. His book is Eavesdropping, A Memoir of Blindness and Listening. Also of Planet of the Blind, a memoir. His blog is at Planet of the Blind. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. And with me in the studio is Paul Parravano, co-director of the Office of Government and Community Relations at MIT. It's great to have all of you. And we have so many callers who want to join us. I want to go to more. Jeff is calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing today?
Very well. What do you know?
I wanted to say that I'm a blind teacher, and I read Stephen Cusisto's op-ed piece the other day, and a friend of mine actually brought in to work because he said that Stephen was saying all the things that I was saying, so it was kind of nice to get that validation.
All right, harmony.
I also write a column for the Watertown Tab, and a few years ago I had this kind of revelation. I was my daughter was growing up, and we were walking around the town like we usually do, and I began to realize that I think the problem that happens sometimes with the sighted world around the blind is that you sort of the sighted world is sort of put in the parental position because they have access to information that you don't have.
Parental position, you say?
Yeah,
watching out and all that.
Right, and that creates a kind of anxiety. And people at first don't like to be anxious. So if you're around a blind person and you're afraid they're going to walk into that table, they're going to trip, or they're not going to know that stair's there, they're going to become very anxious. And so part of your job is to kind of, make sure that they don't feel that kind of anxiety, which is why I think guide dogs, there are studies that show that people with guide dogs have a better chance of being employed because the dog then is seen as the helper. And
but, Jeff, what does it feel like for you then to have the whole thing turned around and now we have a legally blind...
That's my point. That's exactly my point, is that now all of a sudden you've got the parent of the state with that disability. And, earlier today in your show, the reporter from New York, just the fact that she didn't realize that 70% of the blind are unemployed or underemployed, the fact that the person who sells her a newspaper could be like me, having 2 master's degrees.
Right.
And I think that just her surprise and having that over the air, I think, is such a positive thing. And, that's just a great thing. The other point I want to make real quick is I also teach sex ed.
Uh-huh.
And Stephen Cusisto, I think it was Stephen, was making the point about just the social experiences you have, and we have to teach that directly. So even before you can get to all the other issues that parents have around teaching sex ed and all the other stuff, you have to really get to the basic facts of how people dress, what's covered, what's not covered, how they stand.
You mean when you're teaching blind students in particular?
Yes, absolutely. You have to teach it directly.
Mm-hmm, right.
So you have to teach them about what's covered and not covered, how close do you stand, what's the difference between a husband and a wife and two people that just met at a business meeting.
You know, Jeff, this is Steve here. One of the things that I like to say to people is that blindness offers everybody an opportunity for better communication.
Absolutely.
Which is why I think that David Paterson will be such a successful governor for New York State.
Make things explicit, in other words. Say it.
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I go to art museums with my sighted friends and they describe stuff. And we have terrific conversation then about the things that are there on display. And
you know,
they wind up... go ahead.
You made the point about eavesdropping. And I think that... You know, one of the things that people say about my writing is that I pull a lot of disparate parts together, and they're always kind of surprised. And I think that's because we have to listen and we pay attention to everything around us. And it's not a special skill. It's not that we have unique hearing or anything. It's just that we have, you know, it's what we do. It's how we figure out where we are. It's how we figure out what's going on around us. And I think it does give us that opportunity to kind of pull from different strands of society, different people, different personalities, and kind of blend it together just because we're paying attention to it. You know,
we're
focusing on it.
Yeah. Jeff, thank you so much for your call. Stephen, what about exactly that? When we have this new governor of New York, you know, sitting down with the tough crew of politicians that are going to be around him. We heard him joke about having a taster the other day when he goes out with the legislative later. But, he's not going to get the cocked eyebrow, maybe, or maybe even that can kind of be heard in a silence. But is there an attuneness to inflection that might help a blind leader read a crowd or an individual with particular effectiveness, or am I, you know, mythologizing, Stephen?
Well, we all have the Tiresias as a blind prophet mythology that we struggle with, both in the blind community and in literature classrooms. Right?
What is that mythology?
Well, Tiresias was the ancient Greek prophet who was blind and was believed to have the, you know, compensatory vision from the gods to see the future and discern things beyond the eyes of mortal men. And blindness as metaphor functions that way even today in, you know, movies and TV shows and so forth. And the blind are no more perceptive or, you know, skilled intellectually than any other group, except to say that we use our other faculties with discernment and critical thinking. And I think David Paterson will probably teach a number of people in politics a good deal about slowing down, thinking, asking good questions, and in accord, I think he'll have some very, very good conversation, both with his advisors and with his adversaries.
Jim Gibbons, do you expect we can see special strengths on that front? I'd have to say, in the bit we've gotten to know already about David Paterson, that some of that seems pretty evident.
You know, I think Karen DeWitt said it pretty well when she said he was reading the audience, not the teleprompter. And I think that as a blind leader, you can't dismiss body language. I always say you can always hear a smile. Mm-hmm. You can always be in a meeting situation. You can tell when somebody's looking away from you. You can tell if somebody's rolling their eyes while they're looking away from you while they're talking to you. There's lots of things you can pick up. But you don't pick everything up, and, you know, blind leaders, you know, generally have other people around them who might pick up a few subtleties that you don't. But at the end of the day, you're more attentive. I think that you've got to be more discerning. You can pay attention. You listen more. But I think you do pay attention to your surroundings with greater emphasis.
I want to understand the nitty-gritty when it comes to the working world. Our caller, Harriet, described sending out 180 resumes looking for a job, ending up with one, but just one offer still. You've had your own experience of that when you came out of college. I mean, what do the visually impaired, the blind faced, when they march out to try and join that working world that's so important to identity, not to mention income in this country?
Well, I had a similar experience when I was graduating from Purdue University with an engineering degree. I interviewed with 50 companies, and it was June before I finally got job offers from IBM and AT&T. So it took the big companies to take the chance on the blind engineer out of Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that takes place. You try to outmaneuver the system. You say, maybe I shouldn't take my cane on that interview. Maybe I can fool them. Mm. But, you know, dignity comes from work. And that's why it's so important for, you know, we as a country and as the most prosperous country in the world to take that 7 out of 10 figure and move it and change it and make it better for people who are blind. But I think that the you know, you heard from two callers, both with multiple graduate degrees.
Yep.
I think there's underemployment challenges in this country, and I think it does start with parents in the household. I tell parents of blind children that when your six-year-old child says they want to be an airline pilot or a race car driver, yeah. I have young children myself, and when they tell me they want to be things I doubt that they're going to be, I don't discourage it. And I don't think you want to squelch the dreams and the aspirations of a young person just because they're blind. They may not be a pilot someday, but maybe they'll be the president of that airline.
Help them figure out their version of it, however high or humble. Let's go to Buffalo, New York, and Kathy. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kathy.
My late husband became blind due to diabetes, and he went to the state, sent him to school. Okay, he didn't have a college degree or anything.
Yep.
But we lived in a small town, and when he got back, he had mechanical training. He'd been a mechanic.
Good for him.
He understood this. They sent him for small engine repair, and he ended up interviewing in almost 20 to 30 different small engine places.
Right.
Nobody would hire him, and they had known him before he was blind.
How old was he, Kathy, when he was looking for that job?
When he was in his 30s.
Okay.
Okay. It wasn't until the Supercenter came in.
Supercenter as in Walmart?
As in Walmart. Mm-hmm. It was a brand new Supercenter. They hired him. They made him their assembler. And he ended up, before he passed away from diabetes, he ended up being the top regional assembler.
This is assembly for, like, what, gas grills and bicycles?
Gas grills, bicycles, furniture, anything. He memorized the instructions and assembled them. Him and his guy, Doug, had their own little area. Walmart was really good to him, and he was really good to them. At one point, they got backed up, and Walmart called in some guys from the company Huffy to come assemble.
Yeah.
My husband assembled twice as much as two guys did.
As the bicycle company guys themselves. Wow.
The guys from the bicycle company could not keep up with him.
What was he? Did he feel treated right by the company and his colleagues in the end, Kathy?
They loved him. He was great. They'd help. Like you said, the larger companies, they're willing to see beyond the visual impairment. They're willing to say, instead of what can't you do, what can you do? And it may be because they have more employees that even with sighted employees can't do this or can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry he's not with you now, but I'm glad he found that position and that situation.
He taught a lot of people, you know, don't judge the book by its cover. And I kind of feel sorry for Albany because I think the word is not that blind people pay more attention, they're more focused. Okay, I know people who have been born blind may not realize it, but when Randy became blind, all of a sudden his hearing, it wasn't just that his hearing improved, he was more focused on it.
But why do you feel sorry for Albany then? Wouldn't that focus be good in a governor?
Yes, you know, somebody's going to whisper something in the backside of a room,
right.
and the governor is just going to crack out in a laugh.
He's going to know.
he's going to know. And, you know, they're going to be all embarrassed about it or something. You know, and he will remember conversations that they had 2 weeks ago.
Kathy, we appreciate your story very much. Thanks
one
for that.
Yes. I wonder, Tom, if I could just jump in, Steve, a second, because I know we're going to run out of time. Mm. And I just want to point out that the issue isn't what blind people can do. The problem where unemployment is concerned has to do, I think, with the larger public's perceptions of blind people, which remain very old-fashioned, almost Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel strongly that a lot of media, particularly movies and television shows, continue to depict very stereotypical and hurtful images of the blind. And because blindness is a low-incidence disability, there aren't that many blind people, this means that the average public tends to think, oh, well, that comical guy on Becker on CBS, that's what the blind are like. Or Mr. Magoo, that's what the blind are like. And since the public is frightened of disability in general and of blindness in particular, it's no wonder then that when blind people come through the door, the human resources person says, jeepers, we just filled that job.
Right.
So I remain very convinced that bad media portrayal is a huge problem in the United States, which is why I wrote Planet of the Blind, my memoir, in the first place, to say, look at how smart blind people really can be.
Yeah, well,
not just me, but right. All of them.
And we're pushing back right here, right now. Paul Parvano, take us into exactly that, your sense of the sighted world and its interaction with the blind, its presumptions.
Well, I think this is a struggle because you really have to try to balance the fact that you want to be able to answer people's questions and deal with the fear that they have about blindness, because everybody worries that, you know, it might happen to them, and how would they ever get anything done if they couldn't see? Well, they haven't had the experience or the training that blind people have had, so it's impossible to imagine how you'd figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the struggle here, Tom, is that once you have talked about it, once you deal with it, you also want to get beyond it. You know, with my kids at home or the people I work with, I don't want it to continue to be the issue.
Right. That's not the blinking neon sign. That's part of the scenery.
Let's get over
exactly.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it has a way of often rearing its head and coming
it's
back.
It's the 900-pound gorilla, isn't it?
Tell us a story, Paul.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you meet people on a daily basis, I was thinking earlier about walking onto the bus, and since I carry a white cane, people mm-hmm. know immediately that I can't see. Most people, including some bus drivers, not by any means all of them, think that you're going to fall over or that you must sit down and somebody has to get up for you, things that really bring the kind of focus on me that I don't want.
Though you probably get on that bus every day, and this is just your commute.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm always amused when every now and then you'll find somebody who has a different approach and has a much fresher way of dealing with it. This happened to me 2 weeks ago. I sat down on a busy train. I'd had a frustrating bus ride already.
Yeah.
And so I sat down, and this woman next to me leaned over and said, "I'm blonde and beautiful." Just out of the blue, and it caught me by
surprise. Who wouldn't
surprise.
Like that? Where did you go with that?
Well,
Paul?
You know what I did? I thought about it for a couple seconds because you could easily say the wrong thing. And I just I leaned back over and I said, "I like redheads." which was trying to get her at her own game, but a delightful individual, somebody who clearly thought far beyond the typical the perception that people have about what I was going to be able to do or not.
Oh, that is a terrific story. Jim Gibbons, take us home here. You work with a lot of people looking for a lot of jobs here. We've got a governor who's going to be in the spotlight. If we come back, I don't know, at the end of his term and look at this, what do you hope the country, the state, learn from watching Blind Leader at Work?
I think that if at the end of his term or terms, the country has an experience that every employer in this country looks to find people who are blind to work in marketing, business, operations, finance opportunities, then I think we'll move the needle on the shameful 7 out of 10 blind Americans not working.
That would be splendid. You are each wonderful and generous to
Amen.
Share your time and insights with us. Jim Gibbons in Washington at the National Industries for the Blind. Jim, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
It was my pleasure, Tom.
Stephen Cosisto, you'll have to come back. We'll love to have you again from Iowa City. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks so much, and to your other guests, too.
Paul Parvano, co-director of the Office of Government and Community Relations at MIT. Paul, great to have you today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.